compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We're back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. Thanks for listening. We're going to go right back to Matthew. I had to find him. Matthew in Eastville, California. Thank you. You had mentioned before the break that you found that listening to Relevant Radio really helped you, kind of reinvigorated your spiritual life. So with that as your prelude, you said you had a question. So let's get into that now.
Yes. So last year, I took a California missions pilgrimage during Lent with some people who came from out of state who had not lived in California, and they said that the general consensus, I don't know if many listeners can agree with this, but they said that the general consensus is that California should fall right off into the ocean and we'd all be the better off for it. But
that's a bit harsh.
But after going through that, you know, we just realized, I just kind of made a commitment to try to defend my faith more, more courageously at home. And this came recently in the call to respond to the, as I'm sure all the buzz has been about the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, as they call themselves. I am hesitant to call them sisters, you know, aside from, you know, sisters in Christ that need conversion, of course, but.
And that plus the fact that they're all men, you know, with.
Yes.
With thick beards and big beer bellies. Yeah. Other than that. Yeah.
Yes. Pretty big point there. But yes. So I just, in response to my desire to do something and to get involved in the larger effort, a lot of people have responded, just pray at home. Don't go out and get in harm's way. Don't make a public demonstration of prayer, one that's imprudent. They've said that it's imprudent. And two, they've been citing the quote from Scripture, when you pray, go into your room, don't let your left hand know what your right is doing, don't go out in the street like the Pharisees do. Now, my understanding is that's when like you're fasting or you're mourning. But I just wanted to know, I guess, how does one make a defense for the value of having communal prayer in a public space, not for our own self glorification or anything, mm-hmm. but more just to make a stand to say that this is not acceptable in our faith. We cannot allow our Lord to be blasphemed and for such sacrileges to go become the mainstream and become celebrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I completely understand your question. I think it's a very good question, Matthew. Now, as you're asking the question and you brought up the issue of go into your prayer closet and pray in private, and you're right, there is a dimension of those things said by Jesus that do apply to the interior difficulty of fasting and how if you broadcast that by looking, you know, very unhappy and you don't wash your face and you just sort of dragging along so that people will see, oh, he must be fasting. Then Jesus says, you're doing it for the applause, in which case there's no spiritual benefit to you. So all of those things being the case, Jesus also said, this is in Matthew chapter 5, you are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trodden underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. He says, I just bumped something and it disappeared off my screen. So here we go. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do men light a lamp and put it under a bushel, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. So that's an example, I think, of where the Lord is speaking about a public display of your faith. And doing it in a way that glorifies God and is edifying to other people, and yet at the same time is public. So I think there always will be a time and place for that. And it's a matter of deciding in the moment, in a matter of prudence, you know, what is the right way to go about doing this? Is this the right time and place? Is it not? How do we do this? Those are all associated questions that have to be answered. But as a general principle, mm-hmm. I believe that there is a place for those public displays of faith. Now, let me balance that out with a different angle on this. Take a look at the early Christians, let's say under the various persecutions that would erupt here and there in the Roman Empire in the first few centuries of the life of the church. The church was tolerated in the early part of the fourth century, and the persecution ceased under the Emperor Constantine in the first part of the 300s. So before that, there was roughly 250 years, let's say, of intermittent persecution, sometimes ferocious and widespread, sometimes more localized and less ferocious, but it was more or less consistent for the 250 years preceding that. And you know, one thing you won't see is you won't see Eucharistic processions. You don't see mass gatherings of these early Catholics protesting the Emperor Nero or the Emperor Diocletian. You don't see counter-protests with signs and things. You don't see any of those things. But you do see one public witness over and over again, and that is martyrdom. That they did not, and I'm not, I don't claim to, you know precisely what their reasons were, but they never seemed to have recourse to these public displays of protest and signs and gathering in big groups to shout down the pagans and what they were doing. They just ignored those things, and they stayed away from them. They stayed far away from them. And if they were accused of being a follower of Jesus Christ, then those who withstood the test, and that was many of them, their public response to the wickedness and the paganism of the day was to suffer patiently for the cause of Jesus, and in many cases, to give their own lives. So I take a cue from that. And I don't know how far to go with it. Honestly, I don't. Because I think that, as Jesus said, there is a time and place for public displays. But at the same time, we live in a culture where I think it's ingrained in our minds, as Westerners typically, that if you get out there in enough numbers and you have your signs and you shout slogans and you demonstrate, that is the cure for the illness. And sometimes it may be, but often it's not. And knowing which is the right thing to do in a given situation can be tricky. So mm-hmm. I just offer that as something, because I think about that. I think about, why didn't the early Christians do that? Why didn't they gather? And,
it's a very interesting perspective. I love that you mentioned that too, because I'm a history teacher as well, and we've been going over exactly that, the apostolic age. Mm-hmm. It's been cooperating very nicely with the daily readings lately. But the thing is too, I like that you mentioned that point about, I've been organizing an effort with a bunch of other organizations. I'm part of a ministry that works with learning and education about the revival of like the Latin Mass, devotion to that. Mm-hmm. We've been getting an effort together to go out and make a obviously peaceful prayer rally, like a rosary rally. Mm-hmm. And people have had the ideas. I know that there have been a lot of like online personalities, whether Catholic or not. Some have been saying, oh, people should go out and dress as Muhammad in drag or something. I'm like, no, we can't demean ourselves to that level. I mean, I definitely understand the point that they're making, the effectiveness of this comparison, but it's not my opinion that that would be the most charitable, most Christ-like, and the most effective response. I think instead of going out to just, you know, shout clever one-liners, I think the thing that will be the most compelling is just let love of Christ speak for itself. Go out there and speak in truth. Just be out there to pray and just to show that this is our devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus in reparation for this. We actually are organizing the ability to play the recordings of the Rosary by Vin Scully, to kind of put it in that stark contrast. But it's not about making that statement to make ourselves look good in contrast. It's more about just being out there with our brothers and sisters in Christ to stand up for the faith, but in a way that shows, above all else, instead of just trying to be right and to win the argument and the culture war or whatever, but above all, just love of Christ. Let that be our driving motivation and our ultimate end.
Yeah, I concur. So as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about like the Walk for Life West Coast, for example, which is derived from the March for Life in Washington, D.C. against abortion, which preceded it. But take a look at that. So I actually had the privilege of participating when you're in the Walk for Life West Coast. So you're in downtown San Francisco, and I think by now it must be approaching 100,000 people. When I was doing that march years ago, it seems like it was about 50,000 people. But it's all very happy, peaceful people, strollers. You know, some people have signs, most people don't. But they're there walking as a group, not saying or doing anything provocative to anyone else, but it's an attention-getting thing, so much so that the secular press steadfastly ignores it. It will not cover this story. And when it does, grudgingly, it will always dramatically downplay the number of people who are there or paint them as extremists and other things like that. But that, to me, is a good example, maybe what you're referring to in general terms, about you're doing something positive, you're making a statement, and it's not about you, it's about the issue. And I think that's good. I think there always will be a time and place for that. But where I get a little bit squeamish is where maybe it's this, that in our culture, especially in American culture, we have a, and I think this is generally a good thing, we tend to have an ingrained spirit of activism, of altruism, of, you know, doing something publicly, and also kind of alloyed with protesting. We are a country whose history has been marked by public protests in the form of riots in some cases, the civil rights marches. Obviously, that was a good thing. So some of the manner of protesting has not been good. Some of it has been very good. But I think it's part of our culture to think in terms of we can fix this if we just get out there in enough numbers and shout or demonstrate or hold signs. And sometimes that does work. Most of the time, it seems to me, it really doesn't do much of anything. Take, for example, if I can play this in a somewhat different direction. I remember, Matthew, the day that Nancy and I were driving into Columbus, Ohio, because that's where our parish church is located. And it was the morning after a Black Lives Matter rampage through the center of the city. And it was the most eerie thing, because there were buildings on fire, there was smoke coming up as we got into the downtown area, windows smashed all over the place, graffiti everywhere. And I remember both of us being very saddened by this and very, you know, just very shocked that in what we thought was the normal world in which we lived, we realized just how not normal things can get very quickly. And as soon as that was done, and things got back to normal, all of it ended. And it's like this huge paroxysm of fury and smashing things and burning things and overturning cars, which happened in countless cities across the country. Columbus, Ohio was just one of them. But as quickly as it came out, it just sort of ended. And everybody got back to their daily lives. And what was accomplished by that? And I would say nothing. Nothing good was accomplished by that. And maybe some overtime for the cops. That's good, I guess. But other than that, nothing really good was accomplished. And now it's long forgotten, and you don't see any of those things anymore. So to me, that's also part of my apprehension, personally, that we just have to be careful that we don't assume that if we gather in large enough numbers and we have enough signs and we get enough TV news cameras to show that this is happening, that that in itself is going to somehow fix the problem. And I would grant, some people say, well, no, it's not necessarily to fix the problem, but just to show the light of Christ on the other side. That's good. I can appreciate that as well. But it's not always, it doesn't always have the effect that's desired. So it seems like a mixed bag to me anyway, Matthew. But in any case, I'm glad to hear that your listening to Relevant Radio has spurred you on to be more public about your faith and to show that you love Jesus. And the little ways go a long way. Sometimes we're called upon to do big things, but most of the time it's the little things. You know, the fidelity to those little daily acts of love for Jesus and helping our neighbor that are the most important. Thanks, Matthew. I appreciate it. I think we'll take a break. We'll come right back to more of your phone calls. Here's the number, 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Be right back. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? Our sponsor, Creative Planning, has options. More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. 888-914-9149. We'll get you on the air if you call that number. Let's start off with Kelly in Central Michigan. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate
You're welcome. Thank you.
I just had a question about, if someone was baptized as a baby in the Catholic Church, and then for whatever reason, the parents didn't confirm them and they didn't get First Communion, and then later as an adult, if they wanted to, could they go into a confession, reconciliation, and then receive the Eucharist? Is that valid? And then they're part of the church, or do they have to formally go through like RCIA or something?
No, they don't have to go through RCIA. That I think would be considered preferable for a person who doesn't know anything. And chances are, if you know you're baptized as an infant and you're only later in life or making your way back to the Catholic Church, chances are you really wouldn't know much of anything. So the church would say you need to be properly formed so that you are prepared to receive the other sacraments of initiation, namely the Holy Eucharist and confirmation. But you wouldn't, it's not required in any strict sense that you do that. You could, by virtue of having been baptized as a Catholic, you could go to confession and let the priest know, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I was baptized Catholic, but I haven't been practicing my faith for the last X number of years, but I want to make a good confession." You could do that, and it would be valid, in which case, if you did that, then you would be eligible to receive Holy Communion, and you would be in a position to, at some point, be confirmed as well. It's not the normal way it happens. The normal way would be the priest would say, "Well, let's get you into some classes so you can receive instruction and get prepared, and then, you know, formally sort of re-enter life as a Catholic." But you wouldn't have to do those things if, you know, if you didn't do them, it wouldn't invalidate the sacrament of confession, for example, if that's the question you're asking me. Is that what you're asking me?
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So then it would be valid. Once you go to confession, and then you can then go and receive the Eucharist. And then once you do that, then you're back in line and you're part of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, you're already part of the Catholic Church.
Or traditional.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So you're already part of the Catholic Church by virtue of baptism, and you become explicitly, you know, a fully functioning member of the church after you've gone to confession, and then you receive First Holy Communion, and then you're confirmed. I mean, then you are truly fully initiated sacramentally into the life of the church. So, yes, it isn't customary. The typical parish, what they'd say, let's say that person was you, Kelly, and you said to the priest, you know, I'm 25 years old. I was baptized as a baby and I never really practiced the faith because as a child, my parents fell away from the church. And so here I am now. I want to be Catholic and I want to live my Catholic faith. Well, the priest would probably say, great, let's get you into the RCIA program. And I know that it's now changed to OCIA, Order of Christian Initiation of Adults, but RCIA is the term that most people are familiar with. And he would say, we meet every other Wednesday night or once a month or every week or whatever, however often they meet. Or you might say, well, my work schedule doesn't enable me to do that. Could I meet with you and receive instruction privately so that when you think I'm ready, then I could take the next step? He might say, yeah, sure, we can do that too. So there are different ways of going about it. But even if you were to go to confession on a Saturday, and chances are you wouldn't know how to go to confession if you had been away from the church for those years. This is one reason why the Relevant Radio app is so handy, because especially for people who have been away for a while, in the prayer section of the app, we have all those things to help them to come back to the sacraments. But you could do that. You could go to the priest and say, Father, I was baptized as an infant. I have not been in the church at all since then, but I want to reclaim my heritage, my birthright. And he'd say, okay, well, I'll hear your confession. Here's what you do. And you would make a good confession of all the sins that you can recall of your life, all the serious sins in any case, number and kind. He would grant you absolution after you made your act of contrition to show that you're truly sorry for your sins and you have a firm purpose of amendment. He would give you a penance. He might say, pray the rosary every day for the next 10 days or some other penance, whatever. Then you, at that point, have now been sacramentally absolved and your soul is in the state of grace. And you could go to Mass that very day and receive Holy Communion. I hope I'm not over-explaining it, but I want to make sure I'm answering
your question. No, I'm glad. No, I think it's good to kind of talk through all that for anyone who's like not familiar with that. The reason why I ask is my husband was baptized as a baby Catholic. Mm-hmm. I was a Baptist and converted almost 10 years ago now. Then when we were married civilly, but then we went through the convalidation process at the church. And when we did that, my husband went in and he did a confession and then received the Eucharist at the Mass for the convalidation ceremony. And so I was, from my understanding, that means he's part of the church now, even though he didn't go through, OCIA or whatever.
RCIA, yeah.
Is there a confirmation ceremony or something he's supposed to do or?
Yes, it's the sacrament that is part of this, the set of three sacraments of initiation, baptism being the first. And typically in the life of the average Catholic, the next one you receive chronologically would be communion or the Holy Eucharist. And then you would receive confirmation at some point after that. But those three taken together are the three sacraments of initiation. So the convalidation of your marriage doesn't change his status as a Catholic. The fact that he was baptized as a Catholic, that's his status right there. And he can reclaim that. You know, he can reclaim, whatever the right term is, as he wishes to do so. But not to put too fine a point on it, but the average parish is going to say, that's great. Here's how you do that. Here's the class you would take to prepare so that you can fully come back into the Catholic faith. But that's not absolutely required, as I described earlier. It's the custom.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then, okay, this is my next question. Okay. Sorry, because I'm taking too much time.
This is good.
I understand that taking the Eucharist without going through, you know, your baptism and then confession and being in a state of grace, if you don't do that, that's like, you're like, it's like doing like a mortal sin, right?
Yeah.
Why is that and where does that come from?
Well, let's describe what it is first, and that is that when you're in the state of mortal sin, that's a willful rebellion against God. It's a willful turning away from God on some serious issue that you know you shouldn't do, and you do it anyway. It's a form of idolatry, really, because you're saying, I place this thing or this pleasure or this whatever higher than you, God. This is more important to me than you, and I choose this over you. So what it does is it effectively extinguishes the life of grace in the soul. It kills the life of grace in the soul. So the soul is now dead, spiritually speaking, and it's steeped in sin. It's steeped in this rebellion against God. So the grace in the presence of the triune God is not going to remain in that soul that has decisively turned against God, is in essence shown God the door and then slammed it shut. So for somebody who has lived any length of time after, let's say, you know, the age of reason, most people reckon that's about 7 years old, roughly. And if we want to have a rule of thumb, you can probably start to be capable of committing a mortal sin maybe 10 years old, perhaps 11 years old. It's hard to say with any given person. It would vary, but let's just say about the onset of puberty. You have the capacity, the intellectual awareness, and a sufficiently engaged will where you can choose to do something that you know is seriously wrong and do it anyway. So you could commit a mortal sin. My point is that for virtually everybody, by the time you've lived enough life, if you're not going to the sacraments, if you're not going to church, if you're not praying, even though you've been baptized, the likelihood of not falling into at least one mortal sin to me is just infinitesimally small. You know, the possibility of remaining in that state of grace that you received at baptism is virtually impossible. So if you're talking about somebody who's 20, 25, 30, 35, you know, whatever the age of the person is, by the time he's ready to come back, he has a lot of mortal sins to deal with. And so that's where the sacrament of confession wipes all those things away. Isn't that great?
Yeah. So, but why is it, like, okay, for instance, I was listening to the Pints with Aquinas podcast last night, and they were talking about how Joe Biden, and this is probably was like a two-year-old podcast, but Joe Biden had gone up to receive the Eucharist, and it was denied to him. And he said that was an act of charity for him because mm-hmm. they're stopping him from, like, hurting himself by taking it, even though he wasn't in a state of grace. Why is that? Like, I don't understand. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't fully grasp that.
Sure. It's a very good question. So you asked earlier, where does this come from? And this now touches on that question. This comes from a biblical standpoint, from what St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And it's the second half of the passage. So it's beginning at about verse 22 is where you want to read for context. And he describes what happens at the Last Supper. And then he says, therefore, because of these things, whoever eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner, and that's one translation, that's the Revised Standard Version. Other translations put it slightly differently. But the point is, if you eat or drink Holy Communion in the state of mortal sin, he says, you will be guilty of profaning the body and the blood of the Lord. Some translations say simply, you're guilty of the body and blood of the Lord, which is a way of saying murder, homicide. And then he says, so let a man examine himself and so eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For anyone who eats and drinks without discerning the body eats and drinks judgment upon himself. And that word judgment there literally means damnation. He says, that is why many of you are weak and ill and some have died. So if the priest said, I think you mentioned it was a priest that, you know, not giving communion to a Catholic politician who promotes abortion to the hilt, among whatever other things may be going on in that politician's life, indeed that priest is doing something good because he's preventing this misguided politician from further damaging his soul. Because what happens, Kelly, is the sin of sacrilege is now stacked on top of all these other sins. So not only is there no spiritual benefit for the person receiving Holy Communion, but he's now added yet another terrible sin onto that other list of sins. So this is why we're not supposed to receive Holy Communion unless and until you go to confession.
Well, thank you very much. I think you've completely helped, and I appreciate you taking the time to really talk through those things with me.
Happily. It's an important question. I have a feeling a lot of people listening right now are saying, oh, yeah, that is helpful. Because a lot of people never hear this stuff. You know, they never really,
yeah,
or they don't hear it in any extended way. Let's put it that way.
Well, and I went through the RCIA process, and it probably came up at some point. Maybe I just didn't retain it because I was just like, I don't really know, you know, where that comes from.
Yes, and that's
so
that is where
you.
It comes from.
I appreciate
from. It. You're welcome. You're welcome. I appreciate the call very much and look forward to the next time we do that. Thank you. I want to share, when we do this, I want to share something that I had posted on Twitter before, and I hope I can find it because it gets to the heart of a common misunderstanding that people have about receiving Holy Communion as a nourishment for the weak. And some people, they will misuse this and they will say that, well, this is why people who are in the state of mortal sin should receive Holy Communion, because they're weak and they need it. And rather than paraphrase what I wrote, I would like to share with you verbatim, and I'm just double checking to see if I have it handy here. And if I don't, I'll have to find it during the break and I'll share it when we come back from the break. But it's something important to think about. And I'll have to share that after the break. Let's do another phone call in the meantime. Marcia in Florida, thank you for calling.
Oh, hi, Drew. It's Marcia Mohan. And, you know, my husband is, have not been well the last couple of years. He's fighting. He's had a heart attack, all different issues. And he's, I think, about ready to give up. And we've been married for 59 years. And I wonder, is there something to read that will help us say goodbye to each other? It's really quite hard.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
So I am going to, I've gone to confession because sometimes I get upset, with him, because it seems like, well, why aren't you doing these exercises? Get strong. He's always been a strong man, and we've talked together. I said, it's our life. I mean, it's your life. It's our life, but it's your body. You're the one that is suffering. I mean, I'm suffering too.
Yes.
But
and how many years did you say? 59 years you've been married?
Yes.
What a beautiful grace that is. You don't need me to tell you that, I'm sure, but how beautiful that is that you and your husband have had so many happy years together. Well, what is a good book? I don't know that I know of a good book specifically on that. I do know that Peter Kraft wrote a very good book, which I've recommended often. It's called Making Sense Out of Suffering. And that is a book that takes into account what you're both going through, and kind of orders it toward the goal that you both are heading toward, which is God and happiness with God in the life to come. You know, your life together in whatever children you had, grandchildren, your life experiences and all the things.
We have four beautiful daughters and we have 11 wonderful grandchildren.
Wonderful. What a blessing from God. So maybe the thing to do perhaps would be for the two of you to kind of reflect together on all these blessings that you've received, including all that time you've had together. Many couples don't have that much time together. And talk about it and share with each other and rejoice with each other over all these things that in your life God has given you, including your marriage itself. And then as you're discussing these things and thinking about them, looking together in the same direction toward eternity, he may get there before you do, and in due time you'll get there, and then you'll spend the rest of eternity rejoicing together, seeing God face to face, and you'll see each other in heaven. You'll know each other in heaven.
Yes, that brings a lot of comfort, to be honest, and just trust in God. You know, I could. Oh, here he is. He's finished with some. And Susan, oh, thank you so much, Drew. So, you know what? I was wondering if there was anything, but just reading the love that we have from God and that the word scriptures and that helps immensely.
I'm so glad.
I guess we just have to work on our farewell or goodbye the best way we can day by day.
Yeah. Hold hands. I don't know if you can, lie in the bed beside him. Hold hands, talk to each other, And maybe sometimes it doesn't even require words, just being together.
Oh, no, after 59 years, no, you know that it doesn't. You know, a look or a smile or holding a hand.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
There, and that's been a blessing.
What a beautiful, beautiful life you and your husband have had. Praise God.
Okay.
And the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Maybe that. Maybe recite that, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy together.
Right. We do family rosary every night together.
Oh, I'm going to tell Father Rocky. He will love to hear that. He will love it.
Okay, I will call. All right.
Thanks,
well, thank
Marcia.
You so much for all that relevant radio does. Thank you.
God bless you and your husband. Thank you. I'll be right back. Our sponsor, Christendom College, offers our listeners access to free online classes at getprinciples.com/truth. Acclaimed philosopher Dr. John Cutteback is teaching a class now, Understanding Human Nature, at getprinciples.com/truth.
This is The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and relevantradio.com.
We're back, 888-914-9149. The caller that we just had made me think about something important. I thought I'd share it with you. Like hourglasses, you know, if you've seen an hourglass in the sand that goes through it, your life has a certain number of grains of sand in it. It's like that hourglass. That's your life. And when that last grain of sand runs out, that's it. Then you're going to go from this life into the life to come. So just think about that, and remember, you don't have endless grains of sand in your hourglass. It may look pretty full right now, but you'll get to a point where you'll watch the last couple of grains of sand slip through to the bottom, and then this life is over. So don't squander it. Let me put it in a positive way. Make the most and the best use of it while you have it, because the time will come when you won't have it any longer. This is true of your marriage. This is true of your children. This is true of yourself, your prayer life, your life with God, following Jesus. You only have so many grains of sand. And for most people, you don't know when that last grain of sand is going to slip away. For some people, it comes very suddenly and without any warning at all. So either way, it's always good to be thinking about that. This is a lesson I learned later in life. I wish I knew this when I was younger. But probably like most young people, I was oblivious to how fast time goes by. It didn't really register with me. You know, I didn't really think much about it, at least not in the long-term sense like that. But the older I get, the more real it's become to me. And when that lady was talking about this beautiful 59-year marriage with her husband, Nancy and I have been married for 42 years now, and time's flying. But eventually that sand will run out. So just make the most of it in a good and godly way. 888-914-9149. I also want to share, before we go to the next phone call, a note that I got from Terry in Providence, Rhode Island. She's listening on our 550 AM station. And I appreciate you sending this to me, Terry. I had taken a call this morning from a lady who said that she heard that The Chosen was all gay pride now. And I said, well, if it's what I saw on social media, it's simply that somebody had a gay pride flag somewhere on the set. They took a picture of it. It went on social media. Now people are getting all wound up about that. And so here's what Terry said. She says, your response to the question about the Chosen pride flag controversy, she says, I agree with you about the flag on the Chosen, but their response to it is what really bothers me. And I was unaware of any response. So thank you, Terry, for sending this to me. So this is an article in Newsweek dated yesterday. Title, Jesus TV Show Actors Defend Pride Flag on the Set After Calls to Boycott. So I saw this picture on Twitter probably 2 to 3 days ago, probably 3 days ago. And at that point, apparently there had been no response from the people on The Chosen. Subsequently, there was. So I'll just read to you what the article says. This is from Newsweek. Actors from The Chosen have united in defense of a pride flag on the set after conservative Christians boycotted the religious television show. Boycotts of organizations becoming involved in social issues, particularly in the LGBTQ plus community, have started to earnestly take hold after outrage to a partnership between transgender influencer Dylan Mulvaney and Bud Light. And you know that whole story, so we don't have to get all into it. But it talks about Target, Kohl's, North Face, PetSmart, and other companies that have been really doubling down in promoting this. The Chosen was the first multi-season series to portray the life and ministry of Jesus. The show, available on Netflix and other streaming platforms, is creating its fourth season and has a rating of 9.3 out of 10 on IMDb. Calls to boycott the show began spreading on social media after somebody spotted a flag displayed in a photo on the set. And that's where this started. It started on Twitter, and that's where I saw it. And I could see that people were beginning to say, wait a minute, we need to denounce this. And at first, that's all it was. And so you heard what I had to say on the topic. So long story short, the casting crew have responded. So according to the Newsweek article, one of the actors on The Chosen, I want to get to the heart of this one here. We see where it says Jordan Ross, here we go, the actor who portrays Little James. They call the apostles that we would typically call James the Greater or James the Less. They call them Big James and Little James. So Jordan Ross, who plays Little James, also stood up for the LGBTQ plus community, specifically denouncing a Christian guy on Twitter who was the one who started this, you know, kind of pointing to this in the first place. And he says, my brother isn't the only one who stands by LGBTQ members of our chosen family. Get out of here with your hate, homophobia, and ignorance. Not very Jesus-like of you. That's from Jordan Ross. Another one is, I'm just trying to locate the name here of this person. And for some reason, I'm not easily finding it. But there's another actor who is one of the main characters. It's not Jonathan Rumi, not the one who plays Jesus, but another one. And this one, it's Giovanni, here it is, Giovanni Cairo. And I want to figure out what role he plays. But anyway, he says, another one of the actors on The Chosen here, anyone who is going to go at one of our family members for something like this is no fan of ours. They can close the door on the way out. Love one another as I have loved you. We stand with our brother. And this is, he also has a gay flag, a gay pride flag on there. So that is the actor Giovanni Cairo, C-A-I-R-O. And then Jordan Ross followed up with his commentary on that. And apparently other casting crew members are also speaking up in favor of this flag. The Chosen, for its part, The Chosen TV, which is the Twitter account for the show itself, says, just like with our hundreds of cast and crew who have different beliefs or no belief at all than we do, we will work with anyone on our show who helps us portray honoring the authentic Jesus. We ask that audiences let the show speak for itself and focus on the message, not the messenger, because we will always let you down. Now, this is true. You'll always be let down. I mean, sooner or later, everybody will let you down. Maybe I've let you down at some point or another. It happens. This is just life. But the main thing is that this is easily seen as something, some people could say this is like stealth, and they're trying to push something. Now, nothing that I've seen, and I've seen the first season. I told you I would, because for the longest time, I had only ever seen the first episode of it. And I didn't really have much to go on. But Nancy and I have systematically watched the first season of The Chosen. So I have that much under my belt thus far. And as you know, if you've seen it, there's nothing in that that's promoting LGBTQ whatsoever. And this is where I would say we have to be careful. Or as Jesus said, we have to be wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. Because this is different. And don't get me wrong, I'm not here to factory rep The Chosen. That's not what I'm here to do. It's not what I'm trying to do. But I'd like to draw a comparison or a contrast between, say, Target or the Dodgers or Kohl's or Transheiser-Busch or one of these other companies. I'm trying to draw a distinction here between, as I see it, what they're doing versus what the Chosen is doing. In the case of Transheiser-Busch and these other groups, they're proactively promoting the LGBTQ plus ideology. They're doubling down. And they're losing a ton of money in the process. That's true, which is great. The Chosen is not doing that. The Chosen is portraying Jesus. Now, it's, you know, it's an eclectic, you know, perhaps even a bit idiosyncratic in the way they're portraying Jesus and the apostles, and it may not be everyone's cup of tea. That's fair enough. But what they're doing is not in any way anything wrong. They're just telling the Jesus story. And would that more people knew it. So I can get on board with that. Even if it's not necessarily my cup of tea, I can understand the good and the value of what they're doing. That's not the same as Transheiser-Busch. Am I saying it right, Cyrus? It's Transheiser-Busch, right? I want to make sure I say it right.
That sounds right, yeah. Yeah.
Transheiser?
That's right.
Okay. So it's not the same thing as what Transheiser-Busch or the Dodgers or the Kohl's or the, what am I leaving out, the Target and all that. They're doing something blatant and pointed and explicit. And so fundamentally the difference is this. If you have a favorite TV show or a favorite music artist or a favorite whatever, you can be sure that there are people who work for that group or maybe artists themselves or maybe the director of your favorite movie who's got some serious wacky problems in his or her personal life. Probably don't have to look very far to find some pretty egregious things. But does that mean that you therefore won't listen to that artist? I think for some people that might be the reason. If let's say that you knew that your favorite baseball team, which by now is probably not the Dodgers anymore, your favorite baseball team had people on the team who in their personal lives were going through affairs or divorces or DUIs or, you know, and probably some of that stuff would make the news in any case. I'm just trying to give an example. It probably wouldn't dissuade you from watching a baseball game because they're not doing that stuff on the field. They're there to play baseball and you enjoy baseball. So you watch the game and that's what you're getting out of it. And you don't say, well, I'm not going to watch the baseball game because the catcher on the baseball team is going through a nasty divorce and he uses bad language in his private life. You'd probably separate the two. I think most people would. So I'm not here in any way to try to save the Chosen. I'm not here promoting anything. I'm just saying that as you evaluate this kind of thing, and who knows where it will go from here. It could get bigger, could, you know, fade away, I don't know. But if your concern is that the Chosen itself is promoting the gay stuff, I don't think it is. Now, if it changes and suddenly they start like slyly weaving rainbows into the scenes or something, well, that would be a different story. So again, thank you, Terry, for sending me that email with the link to the Newsweek article. We'll get that link posted so you can read it for yourself. And that'll be found at the show page, which is relevantradio.com/Patrick. Let's go to Sue now in Melbrook, Florida. Good morning, Sue.
Hi, Patrick. This is Sue Wethington. I'm in Middleburg, Florida, which is only 10 miles from Jacksonville, which was my hometown.
Okay.
I wanted to tell you how much you helped me 3 years ago in April, and it was very similar to the lady that you just spoke to.
Mm.
My husband and I were married 55 years, and I was a retired critical care nurse who got injured. So my husband had taken care of me for over 20 years. I lost my career. The only thing that I wanted to do. However, he had a sudden onset happen in April, and I was in the kitchen and heard on my radio, as I turned the dial, the word rosary. And I said, we don't have a Catholic station anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I found Relevant. And within 10 minutes, I called, and you answered, and you taught, and Father Rocky, who I knew nothing about any of you.
Mm-hmm.
And Father Rocky was telling me, you need to listen to Drew later today. I didn't know what Drew was either. But I told you that my husband had suddenly become ill, and I was taking care of him. It was at the start of COVID.
We have about a minute, Sue.
He was not going to go to the hospital. Minute. Go ahead.
We have about a minute left, 45 seconds.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to share, like that lady, of how much help you did, the three of you, and what Relevant Radio has done to let us get through that time. He lived 2 months, and I took care of him, and he died. It'll be 3 years this Sunday on the 4th of June. And I've been sitting here all morning listening to you because I'm dealing with my emotions about that. Yes, I loved him. We have known each other since I was in the fifth grade.
What a beautiful story.
But
Sue?
I had talked and did what you said to do. We talked, we held hands, we shared vacation memories, looked at pictures, and that's what we did those last 2 months together.
That is so beautiful. Sue, thank you for calling to let us know that. May your husband rest in peace.